For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Oh, the frustration. Anthony, you almost had your own little remix there. Also, that's not... Why did you have like a...
It was an air horn.
You had like an air... That's not what we mean, but... Okay, hold on. Hold on. I just... Let me hit the button, and then I'm going to bring in Mitch, and then we're gonna make this right. All right, hold on.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not... My beat.
Mitch Tischler is with us for a Tischler Tuesday. And Mitch, are you regretting that yet?
Not yet. Unfortunately, after the game, maybe not as much good stuff to talk about, but still enjoy talking to you every time I get a chance.
Okay. Well, I mean, I would say, game aside, whatever Anthony just did, because we, when we last met our heroes, you had said we got to make sure we have some air horns ready. For this week, that's really all you wanted, as opposed to like a song or whatever. And Anthony, somehow, instead of doing what I thought you meant, which I'm guessing is something like this, Anthony instead put like the air horn that they blow at the end of practice to signal that practice is over, which in a weird way actually fits, but I'm guessing you meant the DJ sound effect.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking the meow, 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 meow.
So you telling me you don't want this?
I'm getting flashbacks like third grade recess when they were trying to call us all in.
I'm just having flashbacks of training camp. Honestly, Anthony, where the hell did you find that?
See, you asked too many questions, Craig.
I just searched DJ Airhorn and...
This is
our show, Mitch. I mean,
you know what? I appreciate the effort either way. You know, Anthony could have just done nothing, but at least he came up with something for us.
He did. Sometimes that is the Anthony Haney way. Hey, man, I came up with something. Okay, let's talk some football, shall we? Mitch Tischler, of course, the Beltway Football Podcast with JP Finley. You can catch him after games. You can catch him during the week. You can catch him previewing games. You know how podcasts work. They're audio for your ears, just like this radio show. Okay, Mitchell, your highest... This was a game that actually had enough that I think this is an interesting question to ask. Like, as we sit here on Tuesday, having had whatever number of hours it's been to process it, what is the thing that you can't stop thinking about from Sunday?
I would say on the positive side, Brian Robinson Jr. I think through camp we saw a lot of different ways that they planned on using him, and I think come game time we saw that, and he played really well. I mean, you know, he only averaged 3.3 per carry. He had that long catch come back a little bit, but I like the way they spread the ball around to him, and when he got in between the tackles, he ran hard, eluded tackles, and looked pretty good. So on the positive side, you know, Brian Robinson Jr. On the negative side, I think you got to go with kind of the secondary, maybe Emmanuel Forbes specifically, but just kind of the secondary issues that we've seen for years with this Washington Commanders team, and they just reared their ugly heads once again on Sunday.
If we throw a confidence level on this staff's ability to fix the defensive backfield, where is that compared to, because like, I think by the end of last year, our confidence level was zero. on their ability to correct the issues because they just kept being so pervasive. And we see a lot of the same issues. The question is, will we continue to see them in the same way that we did? What is your confidence level that this staff can actually get this corrected?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a 6 or 7 out of 10. We'll call it a 6.5 out of 10 that they can correct this. You know, it's one game. You can't bury them after just one game. Certainly there were some questions that I think were fair to ask about kind of the game plan, both offensively and defensively, and then also kind of some of the in-game decisions from the head coach between timeouts, going for two, all those different things. But we got to remember, this is a brand new situation, a brand new team. You know, Cliff and DQ haven't worked together before. Cliff and Joe Witt haven't worked together before. There's a lot of things that are coming together, not to mention, you know, more than half of the roster was turned over. So I think a lot of it is exacerbated by the fact that they played the Bucks, who have such a strong receiving core. Baker Mayfield's a solid vet who knows how to kind of take advantage of situations. And, oh, by the way, they've won the division 3 times in a row since Tom Brady retired. I think, I know that it'll be a better kind of measuring stick this weekend when they play the Giants, who have a lot of the similar pieces of a rebuild that Washington is dealing with as well.
How did the post-game locker room compare to, let's say, I don't want to say like the end of last year, because the end of losing seasons in locker rooms is just the worst place you could possibly be in the NFL. But how did the locker room and the reaction and to an extent, like what Quinn had to say and kind of his demeanor after the game compare to previous teams and regimes that you've covered?
I would say pretty similarly. I mean, I think, you know, guys are frustrated at losing. The team can talk about rebuilding all they want, but players don't rebuild. Players are in there to give their 100% and put the best thing they can on tape, because who the heck knows where they're going to play, you know, in years to come. And so the guys are frustrated. I mean, you could see it, you know, in their faces. You could see it in talking to them. You know, for the most part, I thought Dan Quinn did a good job of kind of, you know, answering questions truthfully while also, you know, not quite acknowledging that, you know, this roster might not quite be, you know, where it needs to be. To me, the most frustrating thing was hearing the secondary talk about communication. You know, obviously that was an issue. We saw it play out on the field. You know, you saw it when, you know, receivers were running open in soft spots of zones and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you know, it's almost like athlete speak at this point. It's corner speak. Every time something goes wrong, they got to talk more. They got to communicate more. At some point, you got to see it on the field. And I think, you know, reading between the lines, listening to Dan Quinn both on Sunday and Monday, he's going to give these guys an opportunity to show who they are. Because, again, you can't make, you know, final determinations about folks after one game. But I don't know that DQ is going to accept this level of play across the board at, you know, as we get into this season, and not just this season, but as we start looking towards the future as well.
Mitch Tischler, of course, Beltway Football Podcast with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we talk about the corners, like, I don't have another way to ask it, Mitch. Like, how different is Forbes than, say, what happened to Sainer Still, what happened to BSJ? Like, do you put him in a different category in terms of, do you feel like there was an effort being an issue, attitude being an issue, and thinking about some of the things we were hearing during camp, he turned it on late, whatever. Is he in a different bucket on some of the stuff you just talked about in terms of what Dan Quinn will accept than these other guys, or are they all kind of in that bucket together?
I think they're all kind of in that bucket together. I think at different levels. I mean, listen, with Emmanuel Forbes last year, there became a real question about effort and want to with him, particularly in the run game and kind of sticking his head in there and getting involved in it. That hasn't been an issue through camp. It wasn't an issue on Sunday per se. At some point, these guys just might not really be NFL starting caliber corners. And, you know, this coaching staff is going to do all they can to get these guys ready and pump them up and get them in the right place. But to me, you know, I just think you're realizing that this is just kind of who they are. And BSJ had a really nice play on kind of an out route from Trey Palmer, where he was able to jump it and get to the outside. But what I don't like about that is 3 or 4 plays before that, he was in the same defensive positioning, which is about 10 yards off the ball, man-to-man coverage, with Mike Evans. And he immediately bailed deep and gave Mike Evans a real easy 8-yard out to get a first down there. And you're seeing a player, to me, when you see kind of those two, not when those two situations happen, you're seeing a guy who's not playing to his coaching, but playing to, you know, quote unquote, not look bad per se. And I don't love that from him. You know, Emmanuel Forbes didn't play particularly well, but sometimes you just got to tip your cap to a player. The Mike Evans touchdown down the end when he's all over him, you know, is just a nice play from Evans. I just think this is kind of they are who they are, and we're seeing it play out now for a second time. Unfortunately for Joe Witt Jr. and for Dan Quinn, you know, this is the first time they're seeing it, and they're getting they're starting to wrap their heads around, you know, they may like their energy, they may like their effort, they may like the physical tools, but for whatever reason, it's not all coming together. And again, just with everything else, I'm not, you know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but it's something that, you know, we as Commanders fans and media and folks that have watched the team have seen now, you know, multiple years in a row from this group.
Yeah, I think the other thing in the secondary, Mitch, that I wonder about in terms of communication, like Quan Martin's a young player who hasn't played a whole lot of safety, certainly at the NFL level. He famously, infamously, whichever one you want to pick, bounced around at different positions last year from nickel, Buffalo nickel, safety, in the box, he's playing deep. You know, Jeremy Chinn's not a guy that's played consistently because of injury, and he's new to this system and scheme, and he had a very quiet day on Sunday. And I think that, you know, specific to some of the big plays they give up, like Quan and Sainer are still coming together, had miscommunications on multiple times that had McMillan running free in the secondary. And you go, oh, those are two young players. And the thing that I'm curious about for DQ and Joe and Tommy Donatell and whoever else is involved in coaching those dudes is how much tolerance do they have for young guy stuff? And also, how do they fix young guy stuff so that it happens less and less frequently until, you know, in an ideal world, it's not happening at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the question because, you know, I think you and I were realistic, and I think folks that are covering the team were pretty realistic about kind of where this roster was, you know, that this wasn't really quite a playoff roster, so to speak. So there is going to be some growing pains as you go through this. For me, both Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice are both obviously relatively young players that, you know, you want to give a chance to. Some of the bigger concerns for me was kind of the front four and even the secondary. You mentioned Jeremy Chinn, you know, like a baseball team, you want to be solid up the middle. You want baseball, you want, you know, a good catcher, a good pitcher, a good center fielder. That was supposed to be the strength of the team, you know, that middle of that defense with Teron Payne, John Allen, you know, Bobby Wagner in the middle, and then Jeremy Chinn kind of being your thumper in the back end. And quite frankly, I thought those guys didn't look particularly good on Sunday. And to me, that's equally as concerning or maybe even more concerning than when you look at some of the quote-unquote young guy mistakes that you were talking about, because they got after Baker a little bit. They certainly didn't finish with Baker. They got after him a little bit. But you saw pretty distinctly as this game went on, those guys got worn out up front, and all of a sudden they were running, you know, they were running through giant gaps in the middle of the defense. And, you know, Rashad White had averaged 12 and a half. Rashad White averaged, 2.1. Bucky Irving averaged seven yards a carry. And those guys just started getting gashed as the game went on. And that's not coaching to me. That's endurance. It's ability. It's all those different things to step up and kind of make a play. And at some point, you know, you want one of your vets, one of your guys who you brought in to be your leaders to be that guy and, you know, make a game-changing play. And they didn't make any big plays really on defense, nonetheless anything that was really game-changing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And this is something that Dan Quinn's teams have relied upon those last 3 years where they've been top 10 defenses in Dallas is the yardage numbers are not always, especially yards per attempt, great. But they lead the league in turnovers two of those 3 years. And, you know, Logan made this point on Take Command when we were recording this morning. He's like, playing defense kind of sucks because you have two really good plays and then you mess it up on third down and none of it matters. And so, like, you know, Bobby Wagner does have, three tackles for loss in the game. Well, if you get a tackle for loss on, you know, second and 10 and it's second and 13, or third and 13 now, and you give up a third and 13, or this happened to them. They had like a third and 11. They have a penalty. Now it's third and 6, and now it's a much easier conversion. And I think it's actually the play to Evans that you referenced earlier where that happens. And the consistency that you have to have defensively to be good in this league is really, really hard, but is the standard. And so I think that's a really great point that, you know, these young guy mistakes can, again, they can be the thing that undoes a drive. You know, you miss an opportunity for a sack or a tackle for a loss. That can be the thing. You're just not quick enough on a screen or with recognition of something. Like, that can be the one play. And offensively, in some ways, your job is just a lot easier, not just because of the rules or all these other things that people point to, but because if you're right with any significance on one of the three attempts that you get three more tries. And defensively, you have to go 3 for 3.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that we were, as I was talking about kind of the Benjamin St. Juice, you know, play a corner, there was two plays that were pretty similar to me for Bobby Wagner there. And in the first quarter, he stopped Baker on kind of a scramble out to the right that led to the first field goal for the Bucks. And he did a good job of kind of breaking down and staying in front of Baker and, you know, getting him to the ground. And then you fast forward to the third quarter, and almost similarly, Bobby is one-on-one with Baker and kind of gets juked, and Baker is able to reach it out and get the first down there. And I didn't really see or hear John Allen much in the game at all. Deron broke through the D-line the one time early in the game and forced Baker out there. But, you know, those two guys, you're paying a lot of money to, and if you're trying to establish a culture and an identity, you need your big time players to step up and make plays, and that didn't happen on Sunday. And again, I'm not saying that's going to be the theme throughout the season, but it's certainly something that I want to see more from, particularly from the quote big name vets who came in the offseason and the guys who have been here and are your highest paid players.
For sure. And Matt on our YouTube stream makes a good point that it was 100 degrees and it had been fairly cool here in D.C. And you just wonder if the heat got to him as well, which is a human thing that can happen. But they don't get a point bonus because you were the team that hasn't practiced in the heat. And so it's something that, you know, both teams played in the same field in the same temperature. Tampa overcame it. Washington didn't. But it is something where, you know, Payne and Allen played only about 60% of the snaps. I wonder if they wind up playing more and better, especially late in games in not 100 degree heat in Tampa starting this weekend back in D.C. Last thing for Mitch Tischler here.
Hold on, real quick.
Yeah.
I think Johnny Newton coming back, whenever that happens, will help out a lot.
Yes, for
Deron
sure.
And John both had an opportunity to play in the preseason in New York when it was hot in August. They then had a chance to play in Miami when it was 100 degrees and 80% humidity as well. I'm not saying it was their decision or choice not to play, but let's point out that they had an opportunity to prepare themselves a little bit better than maybe they did here.
I think that's totally fair. And it's one of the things that I've already noted this week on the show is next season when we have the should they play in the preseason debate, someone please remind me that my answer as of week one in this season is yes. Yes, they should. Last thing for you, though, Mitch, is on the Terry front. I don't expect Terry to be treated like Justin Jefferson because he's not Justin Jefferson. And I do think that upon watching the tape, Terry could have very easily had a 6-catch, 180-yard day if Jaden Daniels hits the throw to start the third quarter, makes another one, and then does a couple of other things that most veteran quarterbacks in the league would do. But he's a rookie in his first start. Totally explainable why he didn't. With that said, do you think Kliff should be force-feeding 17 a little bit more, or is he just not that caliber receiver where the game is going to have to come to him, and that's going to involve some patience with a rookie quarterback?
I think you got to force the ball to Terry. I'm sorry. I know that he had some opportunities as the game went through, but for his first catch to come with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, to me, is unacceptable. We yelled about this. We screamed about this last year with Eric Bieniemy. I like what Kliff does with some of these quick passes to the outside. Kind of there's a duality to it where they run both a screen left and a screen right and kind of let JD drop back and decide, you know, which side of the field he wants to attack on. But at some point, you got to get the ball quickly into the hands of your most explosive, best player on offense. And, you know, outside of Jaden Daniels, who's the most explosive, but you got to get the ball to Terry McLaurin early. You know, a three yard, you know, quick slant can be taken 60 yards to the house. And the fact that we went that far in the game, wide receivers had one catch for 0 yards in the first half. I know that he was having pressure. I know Todd Bowles. I know they ramp everything up. There's things that offensive coordinators can do to get the ball into their playmakers' hands. And that's something that Kliff has talked about and that we've seen from Kliff's offenses in the past that he'll do that. And I think as we move forward, that I hope as we move forward that they're able to make a couple adjustments to make those sorts of things happen.
I 100% agree with you. Let's get a pop pass. That's a completion. That's one that Terry's going to get. Let's get a screen. Let's do some of this stuff. Make sure that his targets are closer to double digits than zero. Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, which you can check out anywhere you get your podcast. And he joins us every Tuesday, 5 o'clock, here on the Team 980. Mitchell, thank you, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week. And I will see you in the press box on Sunday.
Great. I'll leave you with this. Meow, 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 meow.
I don't have it up anymore, but now we have you doing it, except for kind of in a cat version. I'm imagining in my head that's spelled M-E-O-W, M-E-O-W, M-E-O-W. So
absolutely.
We got... Hey! There we go. Anthony Haney's awake, everybody. All right. All right, Mitch. I'll see you on Sunday, buddy. Thank you. All right. That's Mitch Tischler with us here on the Hoffman Show. Thanks, Anthony.
Sir.
Anthony, just sometimes I just sit here and I just... When we get back, the moment you've all been waiting for. Our first Take Command Tape Tuesday. How did Jaden Daniels play through the eyes of one Logan Paulson? You hear it next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6 o'clock, our debut edition of our NFL tier rankings. Did them on Thursdays last year. Going to rock them on Tuesdays this year. Very excited for that. But right now, it is time for our first Take Command Tape Tuesday of the season. Every single Tuesday at 5:30, we're going to give you the breakdown from Take Command, fresh from Logan Paulson's very tired eyes. They're tired because they've been watching so much tape. And we're going to get you the breakdown of the man who we all know is the most important person in that Commanders organization, and that is quarterback Jaden Daniels. So, how'd he do in week one? Without further ado, Take Command Tape Tuesday. Here on the Hoffman Show.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. Take Command Podcast. Logan Paulson there. Craig Hoffman here. Tape has been consumed, Logan. This is what the people wait for. Actually, that's a lie. Most people don't wait for it. They just yell incessantly and don't really care what the tape says. But then there's another group of people that do wait for this all week.
Yeah, I mean, watched a lot of tape yesterday. Because we got to get ready for the Giants coming up. We got to get ready for this. So just about 7 hours of tape watching and had my fill. So excited to talk about it.
Yeah, now that is the thing. Once you watch it, is you watch it all, then you're like, I need to unload this. I can't just stay in my brain. And that's what this pod is for in terms of looking back. So for those that are new to the show within, maybe you found us during the draft process or something, Tuesdays are our tape review pod. We go in,
in-depth on everything from the game after watching the All-22. I have also watched it all the way through because thanks to NFL Pro, which you can learn more about with our interview with Bill Smith last week. I can do that now because the tape is actually up at 6 a.m. The day after games, and it's sortable and all kinds of good stuff. So even Logan, if we need to pull something up quickly during the show so that we can rewatch it, that's not going to be that hard, which is sweet. We'll probably edit that part out of the actual podcast. But that's okay. We can go watch it and be like, hey, what do you think on this play? Let's start off, though. Let's not bury the lead. I think there is obviously a lot to talk about defensively. I actually think there's more to talk about defensively than offensively in some ways. But we all know that in the large project that is happening in the rebuilding of the Washington Commanders, that Jaden Daniels is the most important piece of that puzzle. So how do you think Jaden Daniels did in his NFL debut?
I think he did okay. I think obviously, like, I love the competitor. I love how he approached the game. I love kind of how I think you hear people talk about, especially in the analytics community, how a athletic quarterback just raises the floor of your offense, even when they're not seeing it potentially well. I think you saw that on a down to down basis, and I think the competitiveness was there. I think the one reservation I have about it is, like, I think he's kind of racing through his process a little bit. And again, that's something that, like, where if we could talk to him, I'd love to talk to him. Just be like, hey, you got a little bit of pressure early on. Did that accelerate your process as the game went on? Because I think that's entirely reasonable and in some ways to be expected. And then I think the other thing for me, just after watching the film, was just like, do you understand at this point in your career what NFL open is? And I know, like, I talked to a couple people on the phone yesterday, and it was just like, oh, you know, they seem like they're all covered. But the thing to me is, like, when I watch, you know, Matthew Stafford, watch Patrick Mahomes, like, they understand how the defender's body position leads to open players, right? So, like, for example, you know, you've got this Omaha, you've got, you know, an out, you've got an out by number two, you've got an out on the other side and an out on the far side. So it's just four outs across the field, right?
And right. Tampa and Bay, they're at the two are at varying levels, right? So the outside receiver is running a deeper out, inside receiver is running a more shallow out.
Well, it's more like a spacing out. So basically what you're doing is you're taking, like, imagine you're, like, running on an angle, like running on a 45 degree angle to the out. So you're distributing the field. So basically, like, you're attacking spots and underneath coverage, right?
Got it.
And it looks to me like Tampa Bay is in, could be in quarters, could be in two, could be in some type of soft two. Anyway, the DB, his shoulders are square to, like, the middle of the field. And Terry does a really good job, like, bursting that 45 degree angle, right? And the guy thinks, oh, maybe he's running a fade, and takes, like, a half step up the field. He does a good job keeping his base nice and square, but takes a half step up, runs the out. And I feel like that's open. Like, I've seen Matt Ryan, I've seen Jay Cutler, I've seen Rex Grossman rip that throw. And just understanding that because of his position, he can't break on that ball if you put it out to the sideline, I think is something that is going to take some time. And there were a lot of opportunities and throws like that in the game where I'm like, I've seen you make this throw in practice. And again, like, he's making enough plays to keep the offense on schedule with his legs. But I think that's the next maturation. That's the next thing you're hoping for. And all that being said, I totally understand why this would be tough for him week one, because Todd Bowles and the stuff that he brought from a pressure standpoint is just a nightmare to prep for. So I think everything just felt a little bit quick for him. It felt a little accelerated. And I think, like, that's how I come out of the game. Love the competitor. Love the athleticism, love some of the ball arm skill that you saw, but I think there's some areas where he can grow for sure.
Yeah, it's a weird game to watch back because he is both the primary reason the offense is moving, right? His legs, his scrambling, he's taking some plays that would be -7 and turning them into +19, and you're like, that's awesome. That's good math. But also there are some other plays where you're like, he's the primary reason why the offense isn't moving as efficiently as it could. But that's the nature of playing quarterback. The quarterback is always the reason the offense is doing anything. And so we have to be able to hold those two thoughts at once that, hey, if he's going to have his process not be ideal, or he's not going to make throws to guys that are NFL open, what does he then do? Does he take sacks? Does he throw the ball away? Does he scramble poorly? No, he scrambles really effectively. And, like, that's a lot better and can help you survive in games as an offense than all the other options, but it is not optimal. And so I think that's a good important point to make here in week one as we do our first tape review of the season, is, like, we're judging a lot of this stuff in kind of on tiers, where it's like, is this good? Is this really good? Is this optimal? And it's certainly not optimal to have a quarterback who's missing open receivers. With that said, you know, the concept of NFL open is another like funny one because per Next Gen Stats, I don't think the Commanders had any receivers in the top 60 in the league over the weekend in terms of separation. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that there weren't guys available. And I think the last point I'd make on open, and it goes to the timing of the process, is guys can be open, but not for long, right? You have to throw with some level of anticipation. And there were more than a few plays where I'm like, man, if he threw this with anticipation, the guy turns around, the ball's there, he catches it. Maybe you can make a move or takes a hit, but it's a, you know, nice 12-yard, 15-yard, you know, that intermediate zone that he didn't hit a whole lot in the game, if at all in the game. There's completions there, but if you wait a half beat, then the cornerback recovers. Then the linebacker, the safety, whoever's, you know, if it's on the tight ends, they're recovered. And so open is not just a, like, how much separation do I get? It's how long am I open? And the answer in the NFL is not very long for basically anybody.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to look at it. And again, it'd be really interesting to look at how they get those stats. Because, like, when you're watching it, you're like, yeah, because open is such a complicated, layered thing. It's like, are you open when he's on the fifth step of his drop? And there are times where it's like, there was a comeback that Terry ran versus quarters, right? And so he's really ripping up the field. I think, you know, Kyle used to call it like a lock route. So it's basically like a 20-yard stop route. And versus quarters, it's a really good play because you can really, the receiver can really dig and run. And then when he stops, the safety's opened up, the corner's opened up, and so they just run out of there. And so for a period of time, it looks like he's like bracketed Terry. And then when he puts the brakes on, like, he's wide open. And so if Jaden gets to the top of his drop, takes a hitch and throws the ball, like, understanding where Terry's going to be, like, he's going to look like he's wide open. And so I think, like, that's another thing, like, that I have to say is that I don't understand totally yet the timing and the positioning of the offense. So to me, I'm like, this looks like where the ball should go. This looks like the timing the ball should be there. But we're still learning kind of Kliff's system, or I'm still learning Kliff's system. And so, like, you know, obviously if this is like a Kyle or Sean derivative, like, it makes more sense to me. It kind of pieces together in terms of timing. But that's something that my analysis will get better as the season goes on and we learn more and we watch more of Kliff's offense in game. But I think that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, people, a lot of people have said to me, oh, like, people aren't open, Next Gen Stats. But I'm like, this is a throw that he should probably make, that it's open right now. I don't know if it's Next Gen Stats open, but it looks open to me on film. And so understanding right. The timing, the drops, and how they marry to the concepts is something we'll get better at. But, like, just to my eye early on, I think there were some opportunities that if you were to ask Jaden, I think he'd probably say, yeah, I could be more aggressive here. And I think that's the exciting thing for me as a fan of Jaden and as a fan of this team, is there's so much meat left on the bone, because it's not like I haven't seen him do it. Like, I've seen him do it in practice over the course of training camp. I've seen him make right. Some of those anticipatory throws. And so it's like, hey, man, we just got to settle in. And again, this is a tough week one matchup for a rookie quarterback because of all the stuff we were talking about. Like, you were mentioning something earlier about, like, how, like, he picked good times to scramble. There's times where there's, like, completely free runners to the quarterback. He makes the guy miss. He scrambles for 16 yards. Like, great job. But I'm sure that is somewhat psychologically impactful, you know, as the game goes on. How long can I actually sit in here and make these throws, and how much do I have to accelerate? And I just, again, I said I watched some Giants film. I think next week against the Giants will help them settle in a little bit, because they're not quite as aggressive. They're not quite as nuanced. And so I'm hoping that we see the version of Jaden we've seen throughout practice next week. Not that he played poorly, but I just think right. There were opportunities that he wishes that he would maybe have been more aggressive on. Just, I'm assuming.
There's no doubt that there's a couple in there. I'm going to guess that the one you just talked about is with 10-10 to go in the second quarter, because I charted all of his scrambles and there's only one that went for 16 yards.
Yeah.
So 10-10 left to go in the second quarter. It's a 2nd-and-8. And like, this is one of the best, like, we talk about getting to stuff that Jaden likes, right? Let's go 3-by-1. Three receivers on one side, one on the other. So we get a potential one-on-one look. And in that particular case, it was Terry, and they sent Terry deep. I believe they wound up bracketing him on that one. They also run on the other side a concept that includes a slot fade, which is Jaden's favorite throw, and he's awesome at it. Tampa covers it. But they go, you know, so it's 3-by-1. They're running some of his favorite routes. They're giving him opportunities to do the thing he does best. And it's man-to-man for Tampa, and they cover up everything, completely 100% lock it down. And then on top of it, they run a line stunt up front, and Brandon Coleman misses the looper. And so Coleman's got a free shot right at him, and everything's covered. There's no like, hey, let me get this ball out quickly, anticipate a throw. No, it is completely covered, and Jaden makes a guy miss, and he winds up running for 16 yards. That is like, I don't know, are you a grade? Are you a, you do like plus, plus, minus, minus, up to what, three pluses on every given play? Well, that's as many pluses as you give out on that play.
Yeah, I try to like make notes. But again, like this is the thing. This play, I think, is a really good encapsulation of what like is tough about this Todd Bowles defense. Is like you mentioned that they've got like this, what is it, four-man front. They got four guys in the game. And the way that you're sorting that is I'm assuming that Coleman's to the man side. So, you know, Antoine Winfield Jr. walks up to the line of scrimmage outside of him, right? And so I have to sort the most dangerous rushers. So when my defensive end loops away, there's a rusher seemingly standing right in front of me. So my eyes are there. However, like they're actually bringing the middle linebacker who is plussed to the offensive right of the center. So he's like really not even in my vision. So like, when he comes,
of the
like,
people that you are responsible for is Brandon Coleman, he ain't one of them.
So technically he is responsible for him, but I understand why you don't see him because he's over there. So like you're kind of like you're looking, there's a threat right here. You set the threat, and then this is actually the guy that ends up coming, and that's why this is so tough. And I guess like when you look at the rush patterns that Todd Bowles brought, there was a lot of that stuff where they're bringing cross dogs, late loopers, and it really challenges, especially to the man side of your protection, it really challenges the offensive line's eyes, you know? And like that's the other thing about getting everybody near the line of scrimmage is you misidentify who you're supposed to be working to. So I, again, like I'm not criticizing Brandon Coleman for this. He's a young player. This is a tough pickup.
Yeah, I was about to say, and by the way, it's a young player who's playing on a very limited rotational basis in this game. So it's not like he has a feel for it. He didn't have a ton of training camp snaps. So like, if you think it was hard for Jaden Daniels to play on Sunday, Brandon Coleman, what an introduction to the league for you, young man.
And he had like 14 snaps, and I thought they were all pretty good except for this one. And this is, again, like one that comes with – I think this might even get like a veteran player. Like this is a tough look. But then, again, to make the guy miss, and this is, again, where the floor of the offense becomes so, so important. You make the guy miss, you scramble for 16, it's like, oh my, we just stole a possession because this should have been a sack like – this should be a sack, but no, it ends up being a miss. Not only did it make a miss, but then we gained a first down. Like it's incredible. It's an incredible tool. And it's the one thing that I think a lot of draft analysts and us were really excited about coming out is that he has this ability. And now it's just about kind of all that other stuff that we've seen coming together and him performing to that level or that standard that we set.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this kind of to wrap up on Jaden specific, and then we'll branch out into the rest of the offense. I thought in the first half, most of his scrambles were good scrambles. I've got, you know, Wiley losing inside twice. Second one, he oversets on a wide nine.
Dude, can we just talk about that real quick? Like, Yaya Diaby is an absolute maniac. Yeah. Like, I didn't really like Yaya Diaby's the edge rusher for Tampa Bay. He was like a fourth round
number
pick.
Zero.
Yeah, he's a fourth round pick. Like, his power and his strength, like not only did he give Wiley fits, but he rushed inside a couple times and was like collapsing.
He gave
the
everyone fits.
And I just, you know,
I want to circle back to them. The protection and some things that Cliff did in the second half to make some adjustments. But like, yeah, we need to make sure we come back to Yaya Diaby because what a player he is. But like he got Wiley twice in the first half and there was nothing Jaden could really do about it. So those are the first two. De'Ami Brown gets held up on a route. He maybe had time on that one. That was the one where Eckler had the big block on third down. Probably had a little bit of time there, but like not a terrible scramble. And also, ultimately, it's third and four, and he scrambles for 17. Can't get too mad about that. We had the one we just talked about. And then, you know, there's one later in the half with like 8:29 to go where I'm like, you probably could have just stood in the pocket and made a throw. But like four out of the five scrambles in the first half, I'm like, those are actually good decisions. And my question is, if you have that kind of half, especially in your first NFL start, how much do we think that affected his process? Like, could you see it changing throughout the game to be like, oh, let me default to scrambling a little bit more because I don't have the trust that my guys are going to get open and my line is going to hold up. Even though in the second half, I thought that they did a significantly better job in protection. And there were definitely more of his scrambles that I thought he should have made a throw or tried to extend the play a little bit or just hung tight in the pocket.
Yeah, so I'm gonna push back a little bit. Like I understand, like he's getting pressure on those plays, but like for example, like that the first scramble is the one that he has the Omaha route on. It's the four mm-hmm. outs that we were just talking about. And to me, if he's on time and is on rhythm and throws the ball when he's supposed to, like I'm not sure he even feels the pressure because it's quick game, and so the ball should be out. However, yeah. like I'm not gonna fault
Wiley does lose immediately though, so
I'm not gonna fault him. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not gonna fault him, but if you're looking where you're supposed to look. And you hit your top step and the ball is out.
Yeah.
Like I've seen that happen too, right? And then there's another play that's the next scramble where there's it's like a wheel curl to the front side. And Terry is like what I would classify as NFL open. And for whatever reason, and again, I don't know the progressions. So that like that for them might be dead versus man to man coverage or whatever. But, right. But like he's open and for whatever reason you bypass it really quick. To get to this kind of like angle concept on the backside where, you know, someone's trying to clear out like the hook defender, like running across the field. And then Zach's running like a return route right behind it. And that yeah. gets all gummed up because they're 4-over-2 for some reason there in terms of their drop structure. But I'm like, why did we rush through the first one to get to the second one? And again, the scramble after getting to the second one is the right decision. But why do we bypass number one is my question. And so like that's the type of stuff that came up for me where there is pressure, but if we're on rhythm and on time and throwing the ball with anticipation, like we're probably okay. And again, like I don't play quarterback for a living and it's the reason there's a reason it's the hardest and most important position in all of sports is because of stuff like this. We're splitting hairs, right? But when you watch, I don't know, like Trevor Lawrence anticipate that throw, that touchdown to Brian Thomas in the back of the end zone. I don't know if anyone saw that on Instagram, was making the rounds. Like that's what you're talking about. There's almost like this clairvoyance to sometimes playing the position. And I see that in some of these stuff. And I'm like, just trust the timing of your feet and the process of getting the ball out and let this thing rip. But again, to your point, there is pressure. It's a muddy pocket, but I guess what I'm saying is like there. I think there's another perspective where it's like, hey, if you're trusting the timing of the concept, you won't even feel it because the ball should be out. So I think that's again where you kind of get into these like, yes, I think he made some good decisions scrambling, but also technically, are we in the right position from an execution standpoint within the context of the offense? And I can't answer that, but that was a thought I had when I was watching the film.
Yeah. Okay, so if we take that as the premise then, that at the very least we agree that the pocket is muddy quickly, more often in the first half than the second. How does that affect? Like, I guess my real question is, like, do you see a different player in the first half and the second half? Or do you see a player whose kind of trust and confidence in the pocket is changing over the course of this game because of the circumstances around him?
I definitely thought I saw a guy who was accelerated. You know, like he was just accelerated. Like even the first drop back, the fumble.
Yeah, that was weird.
To be Rob, that to me looks like a Hank concept. So Hank concept is basically everyone's running hitches. Like the outside guys run 10-yard hitches. The tight end runs the tight end or the slot receiver runs a 5-yard hitch over the ball. And then they had what I would call like a push concept on it. So like the tight end is going to release to the flat. The back's going to release to the same side. And it basically plays out like a screen, right? So it's like a spacing concept, good zone beater. And then if I don't like it, I have this like little screen to the right. And I feel like he just speed racered through the concept to get to the screen and then was so early to the screen that it became like this weird angle on the throw. And again, that's where it felt a little fast. You know, then we talked about the first scramble. Again, there is pressure, but it's quick game. Should the ball be out? And I just felt like that kind of maintained throughout. Like I felt like he was just like lightning fast through all of his reads as opposed to understanding kind of conceptually the coverage and saying, I have time to sit on this or I don't have time. And I think that goes back again to like this just being a really tough first matchup for him. Because one of the things that we're talking about here is pre-snap, understanding the protections, understanding the blitz, and basically being like, I actually have time here. Like one of the things, like when I coach quarterbacks at the high school level, it's like, are you actually hot or do you feel like you're hot? Because it's a different thing, right? It's a different thing. Like if we're picked up here, right, we're okay sitting here, make this throw. If we're hot, then you got to accelerate. And I think that's where like understanding the protections, understanding the blitz pattern is so important because – there's times where you can tell, and that's not his fault. He doesn't understand the blitz pattern because these are all unscouted looks, relatively speaking. You know, there's not like a huge file on Todd Bowles for week one of the season because he's a game plan pressure guy. So he made these game plan pressures. He brought them in. And so the novelty of them, I think, is super important to understand here too. So I felt like that was part of his process. It almost felt like the coaches all week were like, hey man, we got to be quick. We got to be fast. We're going to be pressure. We're going to heat it up. And then he was fast. And then he didn't have any kind of like, hey, let's shift it down a gear so that I can see these concepts develop.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think you see that as the game goes.
All right, that is Take Command, the Tape Tuesday Jaden Daniels breakdown. You'll hear it every Tuesday at 5:30. And of course, if you want the rest of our thoughts on the non-Jaden portions of the offense and thoughts on that Commanders defense, which gave us plenty to talk about, subscribe or just go listen. But subscribing is probably better. To Take Command in your favorite podcast app. You can watch it on YouTube as well, at the Team 980. When we get back, it's time to bring them back. Our NFL tiers first edition of the season. Then at 6:30, we tackle the other biggest stories of the weekend around the NFL.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.